Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, back again with another episode of the Nolcast. Bud, this is kind of the culmination of an offseason and a game that we've talked about for, gosh, since the game was scheduled. And it's been a game that I know the Atlanta Sports Council has wanted to schedule for about 8 or 9 years now. So it is Alabama versus Florida State. It is kind of the reflection of the roster as to what Jimbo Fisher has built this program towards. And I'm not sure that you match up completely even with Alabama 1 through 22, but you're as well prepared to enter this game as any team in college football. So very excited to have the conversation that we will tonight, excited to a second degree in the fact that we're able to be in the same room for a podcast, and we're able to enter a second year with our sponsor, Louisiana Hot Sauce. So three simple ingredients, one fantastic product, and one hell of a game that we get to talk about tonight.
I'm excited, man. Jimbo versus Nick, Florida State, Alabama. For all you folks who have listened to our season preview package and went down the positional previews, like you said, 4 hours and 45 minutes worth of that. If you happen to still be driving, ready to listen to this, maybe you didn't save it. Maybe you listened to them as they came out, and we love when you do that too. And maybe you're sitting there at your desk and ready to listen to this thing, or you're listening to us on the drive up to the game. I got to tell you, man, just right off the bat, I feel like Florida State's going to play well in this game. I just talking to my sources on the staff. The coaches over there are confident. I'm not saying they're cocky, but they have had a good week of preparation. Mm-hmm. I feel like they are. They're mixing things. They are really. I'm not saying that they're going to go out and win this necessarily, but I feel confident that they are going to go out and do better than the previous 10 teams that Alabama has opened with. And we went back and took a look at this a little bit. The Nick Saban is 10-0 or whatever in openers as the Alabama coach or whatever it is. Is it 10-0? It's something to know.
Yeah, I mean, they played in the original rendition of this game against Clemson, and absolutely it was the Jamie Harper game, as I'm fond to assign one particular player.
But, do people remember that? Like what happened
that
there?
That is the, I promise I'll start you, and he started him, and he put it on the ground, and this is all from Clemson's perspective.
Play.
And Alabama basically kicked the crap out of him from that point forward. And it was kind of an introduction to the college football world as far as what was on the horizon, what was coming. And Alabama really hadn't turned back in general, but they certainly have not wavered in these opening games. And when you have the opening game factor and you mix in the record that we do know is 10-0, which is against the assistants, it's a nice little mountain to climb, but I think we'll both agree and be a returning point that Florida State's prepared to face this challenge as well as anybody in college football. So I think they've had a great final 2 or 3 weeks of practice here. They've been able to kind of prepare aspects of this for the team without necessarily announcing that it's their Alabama install, and they're at a great place right now. I think Florida State is as prepared as possible, relatively healthy, and is going to be at as high of a level as they can be come Saturday night.
Absolutely. Look, the teams that Alabama has pounded open the season, I'm not saying they're bad teams, but Brady Hoke's Michigan team, Michigan State, which doesn't recruit on the level of Florida State, mm-hmm. a Wisconsin team that was in major flux that year. They got it together eventually, but that they lost their coach that year. Late career Frank Beamer Virginia Tech teams.
Right.
West Virginia, I think the first year that Dana Holgorsen was there, mm-hmm. I believe. They certainly wasn't the Rich Rod West Virginia team. That was, 2014? Because we were sitting in a bar in Dallas watching that.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, the Clemson team, which wasn't really any good, that was the 07 or 08 Clemson team.
I think that's the 07. I think that's the first rendition of the Chick-fil-A game.
Okay, so the 07 Clemson team. And then look, USC last year is certainly the one that I think if you're scared, that's the one that kind of scares you. But I don't think Florida State's scared. I joked about it on Twitter this week, but that was a different matter about closing practices and shutting the media out. But USC didn't have their quarterback in that mm-hmm. game. Their offensive line was not settled in that game. And I also think that Bama defensive line last year, and I'm not saying they're bad this year, but they were just otherworldly last year.
Right, yeah.
So I don't know that those previous games are all that instructive as far as this is a guaranteed result. I do think that it's instructive that Alabama is almost always very well prepared when they come out in week one.
Yeah, nobody expects that to vary. I mean, first of all, it starts with who they have, and any Nick Saban team will be incredibly well prepared. When you add in Nick Saban and then all of the other supportive resources that surround him and that program, they'll absolutely be prepared. Now, you know, if you talk to people in Tuscaloosa, was this their best summer ever? Probably not. Does that necessarily mean that they're not going to come out and be as prepared as anybody in college football? I don't think those two are necessarily the same thing. So Alabama, I don't expect. Look, but if we're sharing a mic Saturday night or early Sunday morning and celebrating a victory, I don't think it's because Alabama was unprepared or came out flat-footed or didn't expect to face a very significant challenge.
What about this idea that Nick Saban is 10-0 against his former assistants, and he's beaten them all by, what, 14-plus or some ridiculous?
Yeah.
Like, they, none of the games have really been close.
I don't think that's a reflection. And this is not just the two Florida State guys sitting around a table talking. I don't think that's a fair reflection. And Nick Saban, if you pair the rosters that Nick Saban's faced when going against his former assistants and let any other batch of college coaches that didn't have any tangential tie to him, I think you'd have the same damn record. So
I think you're right on that.
I mean, Nick Saban's a better coach than pretty much everybody he faces, their assistants or not. So I put more stock into the idea of Alabama being prepared and being as good as anybody in week one than I do necessarily that Nick has some kind of mental hold or just superiority over those that he previously employed.
So you don't think that Alabama just pantsing Derek Dooley's Tennessee yes, team
exactly.
or those Muschamp Florida teams had not a significant impact?
The Tennessee
or McElwain's
Tennessee's
teams.
Of the world or what's happened in – he's really been able to slap that on recently with facing old Shark Mac there at the end of the year.
Shark Mac!
Man, what a great state that program's in, isn't it? I mean, ooh, just – I know not
– a couple of –
Nobody throws stones. It's everybody's – everybody's open to certain things that go on in the college football world, but that is starting to get to a real, real interesting point.
It really is. I think the best coach he's beaten, who was a former assistant, is probably D'Antonio
at
Michigan State. But still,
yeah,
I think we all knew that Michigan State team was very good by certain standards, but didn't have the horses. But I do think that there's an element here, Ingram. And we got a lot of notes on this, but I think there's an element that Saban absolutely is so organized, as is Fisher, by the way. I mean, just that they both kind of have that similar memory of what happened in certain games. Man, look, Jimbo and Nick have had some epic battles in practice going back to their LSU days when Nick Saban, you know, hired him to be his offensive coordinator at LSU. But there are more ties too, like between these staffs, and then ties that are like kind of like third party ties. That this is a really sort of incestuous matchup, if
absolutely.
You will.
Yeah, there's so much, so many kind of overlappings of the Saban web in general, and whether it be what Florida State has on staff, or you know, the fact that these two, as you mentioned, these two worked together in Baton Rouge and went back and forth at each other all the time. Jeremy Pruitt is your current defensive coordinator in Tuscaloosa. Always a hilarious guy to think about. Chris Winkie's on staff. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to know any more about Florida State than anybody else, but he did coach Florida State's quarterback. Not something that you want to completely dismiss. Florida State, again, this is not going to be like a key to the win if there is such a thing to come, but Adonis Thomas, somebody we've talked about more in the past couple of, you know, 3 or 4 days than we had probably the rest of the offseason. That's a kid that originally signed with Bama and spent time in Tuscaloosa before making his way to JUCO. So a lot of similarities, a lot of overlapping, and two programs that are going to know a whole hell of a lot about each other before they face off in the field.
And look, who was Nick Saban's defensive coordinator? Will Muschamp,
mm-hmm.
right? That's a good friend of Jimbo Fisher's. I know they still chat. I think we discussed it on a show previous that some of the South Carolina staff was in town over the summer, you know, maybe we had heard they were chatting about NC State to open there. Also, you got they've played a lot of common opponents over the last 2 years, right? Yeah. They both faced UF to end the year last year, like in very close proximity, literally just a week apart, twice in a row. They've both crushed them both times. Now, a little bit different styles there, but they've also played Clemson both the last 2 years. Bama faced them in the national title game two years in a row. Yeah. Florida State faced them in extremely high-stakes games. So, look, they know everything about each other. Not only that, they scout and offer a ton of the same kids. They've known these kids since they were sophomores in high school. They've known these coaches for probably 20 years. They've shared beers together. And because of the common opponent stuff, they could say, all right, well, we know how Florida State likes to play this. And they run a very similar defense. I mean, the some of the stuff they run, a lot of the terminology is exactly the same. And there's no mistake in that, right? Jimbo wanted to have a Nick Saban-style defense at Tallahassee. That's why he brought Pruitt in. That's why he promoted Charles Kelly, because Kelly knows that defense really well. He'll have an opportunity to prove that he can teach it and execute it as well as Pruitt, maybe in this game, maybe over the course of this season.
What'd he say when he hired Pruitt? That we're all from the same tree? Yeah. Something like that? I think that's probably a pretty good a good summarization as to how much commonality runs through the staff, both in like-mindedness, but also in the terminology and the more detail-oriented parts of the game.
Well, let's get into Florida State's offense versus Alabama's defense, because this is really sort of the chess match that I think we want to see, right? This is Jimbo's offense versus Nick's defense.
Yeah, man. A lot to be excited about. I mean, and also a lot to be very legitimately concerned with. So I think you've got to have an honest reflection of thoughts and an honest reflection of what you have at the roster. Nobody in college football is going to be able to line up and physically overmatch Alabama. Simply, from what we've seen, isn't possible. And you think, well, you know, Clemson ended up performing really well against them. Clemson was pretty contained through the first 65, 70, 75 snaps. There's a very clear delineation as to where that happens, and you may be more familiar with that than I am, but that's the interesting thing about this game is I think the fact that you can't line up and physically overmatch somebody maybe brings out the best in Jimbo Fisher as far as a coach, a game planner, maybe even a game caller. I think that you don't want to get too cute with it, but you also have to look yourself in the mirror and realize that you're not going to be able to line up and physically overpower Alabama.
100% right. Look, Clemson's last 156 yards came in their final 15 plays. At the end of that game, so that's plays, what, 84 through 99?
Mm-hmm.
84, plays 84 through 99, a tempo team in Clemson. That's 10 point something per play. That's not bad, Anger. How many? What do you think Florida State will have on its plays number 84 to 99? Because I got to tell you, I don't think they're going to get to that number.
Say,
of plays.
I would love to see a Jimbo Fisher offense that ever flirts with putting 90 plays in. So if you're not going to be able to do it with tempo, and I don't think either of us think that they've put some kind of stealth tempo package in.
Well, it's a mindset of a program, right? Like, you can't. This is kind of just like,
yeah, exactly.
You know, it's like a golfer who has a great draw, right? Hey, man, just hit the fade here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, man, that's a swing change. That is an approach change that it's very hard to implement. We've seen guys try to do this, and you can selectively do it to a certain extent if you catch them in a defensive substitution package that you like. But overall, tempo and being a hurry-up, no-huddle team is a commitment and a program mentality that you either are or you're not. And I'm not saying you have to be. I do think it can help somewhat against Alabama, but I agree with you. I don't think that they're going to all of a sudden go and just go turbo speed all over the field against Alabama, and unless they've been doing something that I'm just totally clueless about in practice.
Right, yeah. So let's talk about what they can do and what they might do, and maybe historically point out what we think may have some similarities as to what Jimbo Fisher has drawn upon in the past. First thing that we need to look at, and this something that that this podcast has not been a stranger of talking about, but it's the idea of running the quarterback. And it's not something that Fisher's necessarily felt completely comfortable with, but has done at times. And I know the idea of running Francois against Alabama, certainly going to have some injury concerns, but you also get a week with Louisiana Monroe to hopefully take care of any kind of minor thing, get ready for Alabama. How many freaking times am I going to call Alabama Miami? That's a very, very unearned.
I really thought you were about to say get ready for Louisiana hot sauce instead of say Louisiana Monroe. That would have been good.
It would. So get ready for Miami and the NC State games that lie in week 3 and 4. So to the original point, I think you've got to be comfortable with running your quarterback and reach to a place that you maybe haven't otherwise as far as what you ask of him, and just realize, hey, look, if your quarterback gets hurt, your quarterback gets hurt, and you're going to be in a hell of a lot of trouble regardless. So I look for Florida State to employ Francois' legs, and I'm curious as to how you see it and how early in the game you see it.
You have to, right? I mean, this is – and we've seen Jimbo Fisher not really commit to it as a program philosophy, not commit to it maybe as often as we'd like to see. But in certain big games, he will do it. And for instance, he did it with E.J. Manuel against Oklahoma. Right now, he got hurt. This is going back to the 2011 game, but yep. I guarantee you that was heavily in their game plan for that game.
I can tell you it was in their game plan for 2010, and then it was over before it was worth really putting in. But yeah,
exactly. He's done it for some big games, especially when he thinks they're a little bit outmatched. And okay, so this is something we'll talk about this a little more later on in the show. But there's this idea of how do you balance your team's confidence while still letting them know, hey, there's certain things we can't do in this game, and there's certain things we're going to have to do instead in order to win, right? Like, I still want my team to be confident. I want to play physical. I want to play fast, and I want to play with confidence. I don't want them to be thinking, because when you think, you're slow.
Mm-hmm.
But, look, the last pro-style team to beat Alabama was who?
It was the 9-6 game.
9-6.
9-6, 2011.
And you know how many quarters that took for them to score 9 points? 5. That game went to overtime, and they still didn't score a touchdown. They scored 9 points.
Yeah.
That's the last pro-style team. It also had one of the best college ball defenses you will ever see.
Mm-hmm.
Look, you're going to have to do some things different. We spoke about how much Nick Saban knows Jimbo Fisher's offense, how much Jimbo Fisher knows Nick Saban's defense. This game is going to be about breaking tendencies, and running the quarterback is an important tendency to break there. Look, I expect Alabama will expect them to do this. The other reason why you do it, too, A, it cuts down on some of the blitzes Alabama can run, right? Because there's certain stuff you don't necessarily want to run against a real mobile quarterback, especially in some of the design option type stuff. 2, it helps slow down the pass rush just a little bit. And 3, it creates an extra blocker,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Now, if you're new to this podcast, we've talked about this before, but I mean, explain it for the listeners.
Well, if you can't necessarily out-physical an opponent, what frequently helps is math, and that is to free up one other person whose ability to have a blocker. Simply running your quarterback means that you can turn your tailback into a lead blocker or some kind of supplemental blocker and help you with that one additional number. So it's something that I expect them to use, and it just makes sense. And like you said, probably not going to be a complete surprise that Florida State tries to do that. It's kind of a must that you have to do against an Alabama defense and a defense this talented. But it is probably the first thing that we would point out as far as what we expect / what Florida State might need to do in order to have success against this defense.
And if you hit them with some stuff early with it, it's going to open up the run game more for your running backs. I think it opens up your play action game. It opens up anything else you might want to run, trick plays or whatever. There's a lot of stuff you can do with it. I think that's something. If I'm calling plays here, I'm calling a lot of Francois running. Or at least plays that involve the threat of Francois running. And once I establish that, then those plays with the threat of him running, they're going to work even better. But, man, these guys up front are hard to block. They just lost a ton of dudes to the NFL, and they still got a bunch of studs who I think would be starters here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, maybe not quite the household names that some of the players were last year, but you're still looking at Deshaun Hand, Raekwon Davis, Rashawn Evans, Sean Dion Hamilton, Darren Payne. Alabama's front is ridiculous.
I don't think they're as deep as they were last year, but the starters are really talented,
yeah,
man.
Really talented. And certainly we have our concerns about the unit that they'll be going up against. But all the more reason that you need to do things like run the quarterback. All the more reason that we probably need to go back and circle back to an idea that you mentioned a second ago. You've got to break tendency. You've got to break tendency consistently because this is the biggest, the deepest staff. We've certainly made reference to that throughout the season or throughout the summer.
The shadow coaching staff of Alabama.
The shadow staff at Alabama is unparalleled. And any kind of tendency is picked up on, scouted, and the quickest way to lose is to be perhaps slightly undermanned along the line of scrimmage and to have some sort of predictable game call or plan, particularly in certain aspects of the field.
This is the team that tried to have a former NFL head coach and Super Bowl defensive coordinator in a graduate assistant, student assistant position, all right?
Good for you.
I mean, that's smart. Like, you know, push the rules if you can. They changed them, thankfully. But, you know, I think that you have to understand just how aggressively, when you have as much information as Bama has and they scout so hard and they have so many guys breaking down every angle of film, and they've probably gone back and watched every single spring game since Jimbo Fisher got in town. Mm-hmm. They had to have. I think there's a thing, though, where you almost can't resist using the information that you have there, right? Like, they're going to be so cued in on these tendencies that your tendency breakers might work even better,
mm-hmm.
Assuming that they don't have your tendency breakers scouted out from, you know, maybe you showed them back when you were at LSU or something. I think you got to self-scout like crazy if you're FSU. You really have to identify your tendency. You can't have a situation where you have tails in your offense and then they know what's coming, because they already have the better players. And I'm not saying that their talent advantage over FSU is huge, but I do think they have more better players probably than FSU does by some margin. Then if they know what's coming, you're really dead in the water. I think you got to try some crazy stuff. Who was the coach, Ingram, who had the most success just getting Nick Saban to spike his headset and just pull out his right. hair on the sidelines? Like, who's the guy that just drives him nuts because he doesn't really play by any sort of normal convention?
Yeah, I believe you're referring to Hugh Freeze there. And Hugh Freeze, the coach, and Johnny Manziel, the quarterback.
Yes.
Both of which just do crazy-ass crap, and for whatever reason, more times than not, got away with it against Alabama.
It's almost like if you play Alabama's game, you lose. Mm-hmm. But if you don't submit to actually playing their game, if you're like, we're going to play outside the rules here, then you got a little shot.
Yeah.
I'm not saying Florida State is a little shot. I think they have a really good shot, actually. But the more kind of just chaos you can create and the stuff that's new that you can break out, I tell you what, if there is ever a game that Jimbo Fisher is going to say, you know what, as much as I hate running these RPOs and the real ones, like the ones where they take shots mm-hmm. downfield, where there's linemen downfield, you know, I want that guard to come out and knock a linebacker 5 yards, you know, deep, and then throw the ball to a tight end who's streaking past the linebacker, right? Stuff that's clearly not legal, but also not being called frequently in college football,
right?
Right. The stuff that both he and Saban have complained about, and last year Saban adopted a lot more. If there's ever a game to kind of say, I don't know, I feel like this is, you know, kind of beneath me, this might be the game to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because what would you not expect from him? That kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I think it's some of the more modern interpretations of the RPO. Fisher certainly talked to us about some of the bubbles and things like that he's run, but I think the vast majority of our listening base will know what we're talking about and talking about getting linemen downfield. Also, some trick plays. And look, talking about trick plays is a tedious thing just because, hey, everybody should try a trick play or two. But if you've got things that you think you can do, and really a lot of times trick plays are just based off what you see in film. If you see a safety and a cornerback who constantly crash on the run, then a halfback pass is kind of an exotic, but it's still based off of what you see and based off a tendency that the defense has. So Fisher's not huge on trick plays. I don't think, you know, you're going to come out and see the circus come to town as far as everything in the book, but wouldn't hurt you too bad to just do all the more things that are unpredictable. And I think you used a term in a conversation we had a couple days ago, confuse the robot. And confuse the robot is as good of a way as you could put. Confuse all of the advantages that they have as far as the amount that they're able to break down You're right. They probably haven't looked at every snap you've had in a game. They've probably looked at every spring game. Every piece of information that's out there has been computed, broken down by somebody, and the more that you can do to not be completely representative of what you've done in the past is probably a good thing.
If I'm Nick Saban, you know what I had a guy do that I probably pay like $15 an hour, maybe, and you know, then just work him 100 hours a week? I would have him pull up every single skill position player on FSU's roster, and I would look for any passing stats from high school. Because I want to know every guy, can he throw? If Florida State's trying to throw some kind of trick play at me.
Great point.
Like, this is the kind of thing. If I got a stat that's that big, people say, what do these staffers do? You know how long that research project would take?
Oh.
Florida State's got, like, what, 30 skill position players, maybe 20, 26, 27?
Mm-hmm.
You got to go through all their high school stats. They're not organized well at all. That's a lot of different Google searches. That's a lot of different you know, finding searches. Now, some of it's already going to be in Alabama's database that they have. I want to know what hand they throw with, Ingram.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know, I want to know because, man, all that kind of stuff matters in a game like this. This is how deep we're talking. This is something that a lot of staffs you play don't have the ability to do. And I guarantee you Florida State's done it, too, for Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They want to know. And, again, we talked about the continuity or the sort of just interrelationship of these staff. They recruit a lot of the same players, right? Guess what? Cam Akers, he was a high school quarterback. Not a surprise. Yeah. Remember who he was committed to before he went to Florida State?
I believe it's the team they'll see on Saturday.
Exactly. So kind of circling back here, we're talking about a lot of craziness, man. A lot of stuff that's not easy to pull off, right? In theory, sure, and it's tough to, like, how do trick plays work? Well, either the run's working really well, so it's some kind of run fake, or if you're not running that well, if you have a team that's so addicted to playing tendencies, even if you're not effectively running on them,
mm-hmm.
you can hit them with that kind of stuff. But how do you keep the balance of confidence and newness for your team? Because if we just went through fall camp, right, and we did our regular offense, I can't, as you know, Coach Bud Elliott go out there and say, all right, guys, guess what? For Alabama, we are going to do totally, like, all that stuff we just did for camp, we're scrapping it. We're just going to run, you know, triple verse pass on every play and RPO them to death. No, because, A, that won't work. You haven't repped it enough. B, you guys are going to sense, wait a second, Coach doesn't think we can win. Right?
Right, yeah. Yeah.
So that's a tough balance to strike.
Yeah. I think that's a great point and a good job to bring it back. I will say that some of this stuff that we've talked about has been not necessarily the base offense, but more of what was routinely seen. I made a point that I think the best Jimbo Fisher is maybe the Fisher that doesn't think he has the parts that can go up and beat people just in a video game type setting. I mean, just the guy that definitely faster than your guy, who can jump higher than your guy. A lot of times, if you want to look at what that looks like, go back and look at what he had in 2009. I mean, look at some of the first years that he had and inherited a roster that wasn't a real beautiful thing. I mean, Jimbo Fisher had to make Burt Reed a focal point of the offense. That's not a guy that would probably, in this year's with the depth, might be a different story. But Burt Reed's not seeing a whole lot of snaps in Tallahassee right now if he were to sign and play. But that's a guy who made a point to get him in motion, get him in as many opportunities to get him the ball in some non-traditional places. And I think that may be something that you see. I wouldn't be shocked if this offense doesn't look a little bit more like the original iterations of Jimbo Fisher's offense.
I think it has to because I feel like, you know, as they've gotten better players, they've almost become more pro style in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
But yep, now you're going up against the thing that's like, for you Game of Thrones fans out there, I don't want to spoiler this, but this is sort of like against pro-style offenses, Bama's defense basically just picks up the ice spear and spears the dragon, right? You got to do something different, a little bit different at least. Have some wrinkles on your normal stuff to where Alabama recognizes it so well until they don't, mm-hmm. and until it's some kind of trick play. Speaking of which, the result of trick plays is often big plays. And, Ingram, I think that is probably the number one key.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, we can say, hey, don't turn the ball over.
Yeah. Watch your turnovers. They can really kill you.
Yeah, okay. Well, yeah, good thing, because yeah. I was planning on having a couple, right? Like, but you something you can scheme for is big plays. And I just think about the design of this offense, you know? It it needs to be a big play offense, especially in this game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And look, we talked about how Bama's lost in the past, and it's been big plays made by big-time players. It's the Alshon Jeffries of the world. It's the guys who go up and perform, particularly wide receivers, who go up and just make plays over other really good players. What was the kid, the Alabama quarterback, that Drake Kirkpatrick? That's a really good player, especially for a defensive back in college football. Didn't want to play with Alshon Jeffrey that day. I think you have to take your best parts and have them perform against Alabama and make big plays and make the most out of the opportunities that present themselves.
And I think if you look at the talents of Florida State's players, right? Francois, would you say he's more suited for big explosive plays or really consistent, like short passing, lead them down the field like a 12-play drive?
Yeah. DeAndre Francois, let's see a couple of those 4-play, 81-yard drives.
I mean,
that's what you got to see. And when you have the chance to hit the 67-yard pass to Keith Gavin, hit it. And you got to make the most of it. And everybody obviously has got to do what's necessary to create that possibility to even exist. But the big play is the thing. You're not going to see a 16-play, 79-yard drive. You certainly won't see that consistently. So I think you've got to protect. You've got to keep your quarterback upright as much as possible. And when there's there to use his strengths, to use the arm that he has, take advantage of it and position yourself as well as possible to do so.
And the strength of these receivers, I think, is big plays, right? They're not super like last year's receivers, I felt like, were more suited for longer drives, even if your quarterback wasn't. These guys our love of them is that they make big plays, is that they have big play potential. Our worry about them is their consistency on a down and down basis. So that kind of hurts your ability with self-inflicted wounds and whatnot. Along with the offensive line, I don't really feel great about Florida State's chances of making, like, let's say on a 12-play drive, 10 plays really well blocked. It just personally, Ingram, I don't know, a feeling I have there. and you got to set them up, right? Like, I'm not sure that these big plays are going to come just completely within the context of your normal offense. You got to take shots, and that could mean play action, max protection type stuff. It could mean, hey, look, let's just send two guys out on the route, and if it's not there, we throw it away. Don't take the sack, right? These are boom or bust, but I can't have that bust on the boom. The boom side, obviously, we get what that is. On the bust side, I want that to be the ball is thrown away, right? Not take a sack to where I have 2nd and 17.
Yeah.
Look, 2nd and 10 is probably going to kill me anyway. 2nd and 17 is where some really bad stuff tends to happen. If you watch these games, they kind of snowball out of control. You have to avoid that. But I think, man, you gotta ask DeAndre to read just one or two guys on a lot of these shots, and then take off with the football, throw it away, do something like that. I don't think you're sending a million guys out on the route here with the protection you're probably going to get from this offensive line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, you're not. So a lot to look forward to, and a lot to look at as far as historically. I'll just point people back to the what I said earlier about some of the earlier Fisher. If you want to look at one game in particular, my opinion would be to look at 2009 Clemson. Maybe look at some of the things you do there. Think about the way that you set plays up. Burt Reed in motion leads to a fake handoff, another Burt Reed motion, and all of a sudden Lonnie Pryor's streaking down the field for 70-yard touchdown. Go back, watch that game. Look at how one play sets up the other. And you might get some type of idea, in my opinion anyways, as to what Florida State may be trying to do come Saturday night.
Or Georgia Tech. Okay, what year
was that?
Is
the
this?
Lightning game?
The Lightning game, yeah.
So I think that's 2010. Or no. No, that's 2008.
Wait, no. 08 was... I thought 08 was the year they went up and lost in Atlanta on the Marcus Sims fumble.
Marcus Sims, 09, right. So that's 09. Was, 09.
Yeah, the 09 Georgia Tech.
I think the 09 Georgia Tech, the over-under was like 54 in that game.
And we hit it at halftime?
They hit it before halftime.
Yeah, that was...
Yeah, that's the game.
They had a defensive issue.
Yeah.
or two in that game, Ingram.
Yeah. Imagine that. That defense wasn't ready to face a triple option offense that required a whole lot of discipline. So,
all right. So personnel wise in the secondary for Alabama, and I've seen these guys in person a lot. Micah Fitzpatrick is a guy I think a lot of FSU recruiting fans will know.
Mm-hmm.
If Derwin James is not the best DB in the country, Micah is. It's you probably almost certainly have the two best DBs in the nation in this game facing off. He's going to play in the slot a lot, I think, against 11 personnel when Florida State decides to go three wide. Otherwise, he'll probably be back there at safety. Ronnie Harrison is also back there at safety. He's a stud. When they're both back at safety, that's the best safety combo in the nation.
Yeah.
That's very tough to hit those big plays on, which is why you have to be very creative and set up some shots and some trick plays and whatnot, because if you're not running the ball that effectively, Bama's going to sit in a two shell and eat your lunch, mm-hmm. right? We saw this last year against LSU. Now, I think Florida State's offense is a heck of a lot better than LSU's was. But I got to tell you, man, I'm not quite as blown away by their corners this mm-hmm. year, right? Like, the Anthony Averett kid is, I think, is pretty good. Yep. But I don't know if he's, like, first-round stud good. I mean, I may be wrong. I was wrong about DeMarcus Walker not being as highly drafted as he was, and I've been wrong before. But Anthony Averett, to me, looks like a good player. I don't know if he's like a typical Alabama Drake Kirkpatrick, mm-hmm. That level of stud.
Trayvon Diggs, maybe a better punt returner than he is corner.
Was a receiver this time last year, wasn't he?
Right.
I mean, look, Xavier Rhodes made a really nice switch from receiver to corner. And I always thought Trayvon Diggs should be a corner, by the way. I thought he was better at corner. I didn't think he was all that special as a receiver, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
That's who I attack from Florida State.
Yeah.
All right. I find Fitzpatrick because I want to see where he's going to be, because he's just kind of a dude who just – he's kind of got that Ed Reed quality about him where he's always just kind of making plays, man. Mm-hmm. I want to find Diggs, and I want to throw at Diggs. I want to Diggs, show me you can cover. You know, he got burned a lot in the Alabama spring game. You know, now by some very good receivers, granted, but prove it. Florida State's got some dudes at receiver who on a play-to-play basis can be really, really good. You know, we'll see about the consistency, but I think that's who you attack there.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think before we take our break and start talking about defense, and man, we're going to go over an hour tonight, I think, just on this game. But
reflection of a whole lot of interest and excitement, and man, we've had, like I said, we've had about 18 months to kind of mentally break this down. I was when I went back and listened to our tight end preview, we lost ourselves about three quarters of the way talking about what the 2017 tight ends might be, and the fact that you could probably run a whole lot of double tight sets against 2017 Alabama. So we've been looking forward to this one for a little.
You mean our 2016 tight end?
Our 2016 tight end preview somehow led into a 2017 ideas to what you might be able to scheme for in this game. So, yeah, it's something we've had in the back of our minds for a little while.
If you're Jimbo, right, do you think he's a coach that plays to a number? Because sometimes I do, right? Like, mm-hmm. I feel like we know his record when he scores, what, under 28 points is like 16 and 11, and so it's like 50 and 6 or something like that when he scored at least 28. I went back and looked, Ingram, and I pulled up Alabama's last 4, 5, 6, 7. Their last 7 losses. Here's how many points they've allowed. 45, 43, 42, 35, 34, 29, and 23. Now, to me, that tells me a couple things. Number one, you are probably not winning this game if you do not score in the 30s.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like Alabama's offense, people are like, oh, it's not very good. Man, they got a lot of guys drafted, and they always end up scoring a lot of points. Yeah. So you better score at least 30 points.
They can normally run the ball pretty well.
Number two, I don't feel like Nick Saban is as comfortable coaching in games where the score is, 34, 35, or in the 40s.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's something to this that when they lose, it's because he loves coaching these 21-17.
Right, oh, yeah.
Let me punt it and kick a field goal and see if you can, march down the field against my monsters in my front seven. That's grooving him a fastball.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to try to get him out of his comfort zone as a coach. And, to some extent, Fisher has to leave his comfort zone as a coach, too, and really push to score a lot of points, man. And there's a couple ways that you do that. The first one is, does Herm Edwards have "you play to win the game" trademarked? Because if he doesn't, he need, "you play to win the game," that type of thing. If your goal was to go out and lose close, I really believe Jimbo could do that.
Mm-hmm.
If he's like, I want to keep this game close so that if we do lose, in the committee's eyes, it'll be a close loss, right? I think Florida State could do that. They could play a real slow tempo. They could punt. They could play good defense. They could go out there and lose that game, 30-23 or something, right? But if you want to win, you have to coach differently. I really think, and I'm not saying I think Alabama's going to score a zillion points, because I don't, but I really think you have to make the decision, look, we're going to go for it on fourth downs when the math says we should. You cannot afford to be giving away these possessions like Fisher did last year in the North Carolina game and in some other games to Alabama. You just can't do it. Like that, this ultra-conservative game management stuff is not going to work. It's like, you know, trying to wait out the IRS, okay? Come on, man. You have to manage your third downs to set up manageable fourth downs. And by that, I mean, if I've got third and nine from the 40, I don't need all nine, right?
Right.
Give me six, so I'm at 34, right? And don't trot the damn field goal team out there for a 51-yarder. I'm going for it, right? Make Alabama – and this matters too, because if you make Alabama – say, okay, well, look, they'll throw underneath on third and nine and get something out of it. And then we're going to have to defend a fourth down, too. That's tough. That's an Ole Miss type tactic that drives Nick Saban nuts. Field goals, I don't care if you make or miss them. I think if you kick more than like three or four times this game, you're losing.
Yeah, no, I think you made a great point, bud. You're not, don't be lured into some siren song of some 18-21 or something game with Nick Saban. That's just not. That's what he wants. That's what his roster's built for. Certainly, you know, look, if you're going to tell me going into the game that you get a chance to have some long drive at the end of it to win it or tie it or something like that, I'm sure most Florida State fans would probably take that. But completely agree. If you're going to win this game, I think you need to score a significant amount of points, and kicking field goals isn't necessarily that great, even if you're making them all the time. And our field goal situation is yet to be seen in 2017, but certainly what you did see in 2016 might have you have a little bit of concern as to how productive kicking may be in general.
They need to get to at least 28, I feel like. Like, not saying to win, but they need to get to 28 to have a good result, whether that's a win or whether that's a, look, man, Florida State is a legit, you know, title contender. Because I don't think if they get to 28, like, I don't think there's any way they get blown out. Like, I don't see Alabama saying, oh, you got 28, we got 55, right? This is not going to be like USC last year, I don't personally believe. All right, man, before we shift it over to the defense, we probably need to talk a little bit of sponsorship here. Got to pay some bills, and Madison Social is one of the folks that really helps us out. Been with us since the beginning, since we became the Nolecast, and happy birthday
happy birthday.
to Madison Social and to the For the Table Restaurant Group. Fourth birthday, man. They've been around since August of 2013.
Yeah, that's incredible. Certainly came about the right time. But yeah, 4 years they've been with us since the get-go. Great guys, great partners, and a product that we don't ever have to be unauthentic as to our real interest in exploring and being able to talk about three, soon to be four, different spots that they brought to Tallahassee, and have really kind of changed that area of town and just brought such a different series of options that existed even a decade ago. So happy birthday. We're lucky to be able to partner with you, and we look forward to many years moving forward.
And I know there's something coming up with Proof Brewing as well with Madso.
Yeah, they've got a lot going on, and that's certainly something that we'll continue to talk about and keep people up to date on. But let's keep people up to date on some of the guys that they need to know, probably already know most of them, but just some of the general names that will jump out at you when you look at Alabama's offense.
Yeah, let's do that, man. They have a lot of guys, a lot of guys who are good. Ross Pierschbacher is a really good interior lineman for them. Jonah Williams is arguably the best offensive tackle in the SEC. Damian Harris, Bo Scarborough are a really dynamite 1-2 running back combo for the Tide. You know, Bo's interesting because you watch him, he's actually more of a guy who has like actual like breakaway ability. Mm-hmm. He's not necessarily somebody who is somebody like grinding out real tough yards on a down and down basis.
Yeah.
He's got a little of that like Garrett Blunt in him.
He does.
You know, for you NFL fans, and I guess he did it for a little while at Oregon. And at receiver, Calvin Ridley, dude. Is the best receiver in this game. He is, you know, one of the best players in this game, regardless of position. He's going to be an absolute handful for FSU's defense, and they're going to have to find a way to limit him. Just so good at the route running, and man, he doesn't give things away. And I tell you what, true freshman Jerry Jeudy was one of my favorite receiver prospects in the class last year, and I always called him Mr. No Negatives, right? Like, hey, you know, he's Mr. You know, kind of like A minus on everything. Is he the biggest guy? No. Right. Is he the fastest? No. Is he the absolute best hands? No. But he does everything really well. I mean, it's kind of like the guy that just racks up A minuses in school, and then all of a sudden he's got a 3.6 or whatever GPA, and it's like, how does that happen? Well, it, you know, almost like a, and I'm not supposed to speak this name, almost like a Marvin Harrison type player as far as style. I'm not saying he's as talented yet, but he's got some of that in his game. And then they got a guy at quarterback who, look, wasn't a great passer last year, but he was incredible as a runner, mm-hmm. came like 20 seconds away from winning the national title, scored what should have been the national title winning touchdown if Clemson hadn't got 99 plays on Alabama's defense, scored the game winning touchdown in Death Valley in Baton Rouge as a true freshman, not a redshirt. I mean, this guy, and he's young for his age as well. I don't know how much better of a passer he's going to be, but I do think that people writing him off completely as a thrower are probably making a mistake. I mean, if we assume DeAndre can improve, can't a guy who was a true freshman last year?
Yeah, you would certainly think that, and Florida State's got a great set of coaches on the offensive staff, and I would think that Jalen Hurts would do nothing but benefit from the new offensive coordinator that Alabama brought in, a guy with a pro style or much more of a pro background. And I think Hurts is significant. He's kind of representative of Nick Saban embracing the more modern approach, certainly gives him ability to RPO and do some of the things that gave him the periodic trouble that they would have in the SEC West was normally representative of the new modern approach to football. So Hurts is, I think Saban and Alabama's all in with Hurts, excited about what the future will bring, and I think it's a kid who will make an improvement and will be a much more polished passer, certainly by the time that he leaves, but curious to see how much of a jump he's made in the summer.
I totally agree with you, but I'm going to counter with this. Show me.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I'm not going to go into this game assuming that you can do it, right?
Yeah, like, yeah.
If you're FSU, what's your game plan for this, man?
Yeah. Let's see how much of that progress you actually made, Jalen Hurts.
Exactly.
Throw the ball. I'm going to force you to throw the ball. I'm going to force you with looks. I'm going to force you with blitzes. I'm going to make Jalen Hurts put the ball in the air and beat me.
Exactly. I'm covering up every single offensive lineman. I'm taking away the run lanes. I'm packing the box. I'm saying, hey, if you can beat me as a thrower, all right, rest of college football, you're screwed.
Mm-hmm.
Because we know how well Alabama runs the ball. If he's actually that good enough as a passer, can we just skip ahead to like 2020, or until Justin Fields gets here to Georgia or wherever? Seriously, if that kid becomes an elite or even a pretty good passer, everybody else is toast.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you have to commit so many resources to stop Alabama's run game.
Yeah.
So, I don't think he'll become that. I'm taking the gamble, right? What I don't want to have happen is have Alabama run all over me. I'm going to load up the box. I'm going to play aggressive coverage on the outside. I'm not going to give him these real short throws. I know we talked about this a lot on that one show. We talked about how many short passes Alabama throws, right? A ton of them. In fact, Alabama threw, and this is per David Hale, I want to give him credit of ESPN, they threw a higher percentage of passes behind the line of scrimmage last year than any team. Not any Alabama team,
right?
But any team in college football since 2011.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty nuts, man. I'm taking that away. I want to get you out of your comfort zone. And if you can beat me consistently down the field, I'll tip my cap, I'll take my loss, and I'll go home. But I want you to show me you can do it. That's my game plan going into this. I want to stop the run, and I'm going to commit the guys and the numbers to do it.
So I mentioned him a second ago of what you might see of a progression of Hurts, but what do you think exactly Alabama's new offensive coordinator brings, and what do you think he tries to do to defeat Florida State?
I think he's going to try to run the ball more. I mean, not necessarily more with like Jalen Hurts, but I think they're going to be committed to the run. I do think that he's brought in to bring more of a, not necessarily throw the ball more, but throw it a little bit differently, maybe a little more pro-style passing. I think he was certainly brought in to develop Jalen Hurts, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Like, we saw that Jalen Hurts had almost instant success for the Tide. However, we didn't really see him develop that much as a passer as the season wore on. And I think if you're Nick Saban, perhaps your concern is, well, damn, is Lane Kiffin actually going to develop this kid as a passer? Or is he just going to create kind of, shot plays for him? Which, one thing might be great for one game. It may not be as great for an entire season. So I think he's going to try to be a little more pro-style. But is he going to do that in game one? Or do you think they're probably going to lean on what Jalen Hurts feels most comfortable doing, which is what I think is going to happen?
Right. Yeah, certainly. I don't think Alabama has any great variation from what they've done and what they've been very successful at. But yesterday, around 7:30 or so, we got news that Matthew Thomas has been cleared to rejoin the team, that any kind of hurdle that was in his way has been removed. Now, I know you and I initially had maybe some thoughts as far as the NCAA's acclimation process. That sounds like that's been resolved, and so how much he plays in the game is going to be representative as to how ready he is or how ready he can be. What does that look like? I mean, first of all, I think we should talk to the general listening audience as to, like, yes, you can run, you can lift, you can do all the things that you do. There's still some spots that you really have to have. Just as a general football player, you have to have repped in tackling people. Particularly when it comes to game plan, you've got to know what your run fits are. You've got to know what the scheme is, how it's designed, and what it's particularly asked of you. And I'm not taking shots at Thomas, but we're not necessarily talking about a kid that's had impeccable discipline on the field. I'm talking about as far as his responsibilities in general. So great that he's back. Happy for the kid. Hopefully he's able to progress towards a degree, but let's just have a small conversation as to what exactly his addition or his ability to rejoin the team may look like for Saturday.
Well, and I think this is multifaceted, right? Look, Thomas is your best linebacker, skill-wise.
Mm-hmm.
But when they're putting in their run fits on day one or day two of Alabama prep, he's not there. I mean, like... The one day he wasn't even out on the field, right? Remember, like, because we saw the Democrat and us and some other outlets reported he wasn't. He
came out at the end of practice.
Yeah. He came out at the end of practice.
Yeah.
They're doing some of their run install stuff. So to me, that kind of makes me wonder, you know, how much of this he's got. Now, I'm sure they've gone over with him a lot.
Yeah.
But it's still not quite the same as you know, you can learn by – you can learn visually. You can learn – what, audiologically or whatever, you know, by hearing. And you can also learn whatever it's called when people learn by doing.
Mm-hmm.
I do think there's a certain element here where learning by doing matters a whole lot. You understand the steps. You understand, okay, in this front, in this call, we're going to play, you know, this like this. You know, guard comes at me. What do I do here? You know, how do I play? Am I the force player on this play? Am I the chase? There's a lot of stuff there that's not super easy to just get off. Hey man, here's the game plan. Here's what you do. That's more of like a thing that NFL guys do. You know, hey, I know you're hurt, but as long as you're gonna be in the training room all week,
right? Yeah,
we're gonna have a coach with you. You're gonna watch practice live.
Yeah,
and I'm gonna tell you what you do. But hey,
just tell me you're good to go on Sunday.
10-year NFL vet guy is probably gonna get that a little more than.
Can you go? Yes, great.
Right,
exactly.
So okay, so that's one part of it. Here's the other part. How good is his backup? If you're Florida State and you're selling out to stop the run, is Emmett Rice your best option, man? Because
how good is he, and how much deterioration of his gameplay takes? We talked about the snap count as far as what Florida State's offense could do with Bama, or in particular what Clemson's defense did to Clemson's offense did to Alabama's defense. How much does Emmett Rice's game deteriorate from snap 20 to 25? 25 to 30. Yeah, I think that's what you're really looking at is maybe taking some of those ABs away from Rice and hopefully having a little bit higher level player throughout the course of the four quarters.
Absolutely. Also, Ingram, think about this. In the first half, they will not have Trey Marshall.
Yeah.
You know who's going to be behind him now? Because Andrews is ruled out for the game, by the way, today. He's not healthy enough.
Okay.
Who does that leave? Urban Lane.
Urban. There you go, Urban. We told you were going to get a chance.
And Westbrook.
And Westbrook, yeah.
All right. You know how many, out of those two, how many guys do I really feel good about against Scarborough in the open field?
Yeah, I think I know. And yeah. It's not a big number.
No, it's 6 times 0 = 0, right?
Yeah, still does.
Yeah, 2 times 0 = 0. I think you look into using Jacob Pugh or Donis Thomas, and I think that fits into your overall scheme of, look, if your goal is to stop the run here at all costs,
yeah, absolutely.
Then maybe don't screw around with a guy who's 204 pounds or whatever, or 215. Give me that guy who's 220 or 230, and I'll try to live with his coverage liabilities, right? If you don't have a prepared Matthew Thomas, then you're going to have to deal with either and look, Matthew Thomas is clearly the answer to this if he's right and he's ready.
Yeah.
I think we're both a little bit skeptical that he's fully ready. But, man, if
you'd love to be wrong.
Otherwise, it's you got a real small guy in Emmett Rice who could easily give up a big-time run because he gets washed out of a play. He's also a young guy. Or Jacob Pugh or Donis Thomas, who are bigger dudes. Now they may not be as good in coverage, but then again, that kind of fits into our whole strategy. Make Jalen Hurts beat you with his arm. I think that's that's kind of a big deal right there. You know, another thing about this strategy, by the way, and this is kind of off script. We talked about you could play to keep this thing close, but you want to play to win the game, right? You want that W. This defensive game plan that we're suggesting is not necessarily the one that would keep the game the closest, right? You could load the box and then play very conservative coverage and give them some of the short throws on the outside.
Exactly.
Make the game clock run, that type of thing. But I don't think they're going to do that. I think they're going to be aggressive and try to win the game and deny the football, which brings another point up here. They have got to play well against the screen game outside because you know Bama's going to try and do that. Last year, Florida State, we brought this up in our defensive back preview. Where were they rating interceptions, but also where were they rate stopping the run outside of the tackles? Because a lot of that was on the DBs last year, man. I think you're going to be better at this year for two reasons. Number one, I think Derwin's playing. When Alabama's in three wide, I think Derwin's your star.
Yeah.
I think he's playing at the star or the nickel. I think that's going to be a big deal. I think he's going to do it a lot. The question I have, though, is Travaris McFadden going to play physical and play up to his size? And what does Levante Taylor look like over there on the other side? Mm-hmm. Because he's not that big.
I think if you're going to take a gamble with that, then those are two guys. Certainly, I mean, look, you can't have it perfect. But if you're going to tell me that you got to gamble on how prepared Levante Taylor is, it's not the greatest sense of confidence that I have. But I think that's a not the worst thing to fall back on. So you got to turn that kid loose. All the confidence in the world he appears to have in himself. And tell him he's going to be on an island and to just play his ass off because that's what will be necessary. And I don't think it's an unnecessary expectation between he and Samuels III and some of the other kids that you have that they could come right in and play pretty well against what exactly they're going to face. And look, if you got a decent coverage and 32 yards down the field, Jalen Hurts puts it in an 8-inch box that's the only place his receiver could get to, and he makes a catch, then that's part of the scheme. That's what you made him do. That's what you wanted him to do. And if they're able to execute it, then so be it. But I like what Florida State has there. Certainly share your concerns about getting through the first half without Trey Marshall. That's something that I am continually reminded of. And
it's so stupid.
So dumb. So dumb. But it is the case. And Florida State's just got to get by and get through. And it's unfortunate because Marshall's such a great help in run support and what he's able to do and what he'd particularly be asked to do in this game plan. But you're not going to have him. You're not going to have him. And as dumb as it is, you're not going to have him. So best of luck in the first half.
Exactly. And I feel like, I don't know. I was going to say I'd almost rather not have him for the second half, but that's not true. He could come in and give you a little spark in the second half. If you have him in the second half, you could perhaps move Derwin around some. I do think having Derwin that close to Jalen Hurts could make Jalen Hurts nervous. Because I tell you what, go back to watch the LSU game. How many times did they blitz out of the slot and mess with his timing? Not only did they mess with his timing in the passing game, they screwed with his reads in the read option game.
Yeah.
They made him hold the ball for an extra second. They sacked him a little bit, but more importantly, they kind of just made him look bad. And that was the first team that really, really came after him. Well, I guess the first team with talent, right? I don't really care what some of these teams that don't have players do. But, you look at Florida State, their defensive talent is equal to LSU, certainly. I think elements of that game plan will be in this game plan. Loading up the box, trusting your guys on the outside, and then bringing pressure, not necessarily to sack him, but run blitzes, but also contain blitzes. And I think having Derwin James there in the slot, in that star position, I think it helps against the screen game some. He's not easy to block. We saw him pancake an offensive tackle in Florida.
Yeah.
That one time. He makes a lot of plays. I think he can wreck some havoc, and they're going to need him to, especially until Trey gets back. That's a big deal, having him out there. And then there's another guy that they got to find a way to get in space because he has special ability, but he also has special liability with his size or lack thereof.
Great transition there. And I think this defense is I don't know if it's necessarily drawn around two players, but I think it's with the idea of featuring two players. Let me put it that way. And James is one of them, but also Burns is the other. Burns has had everything that I've heard, another great camp, has made a jump, put on some good weight, but is still not somebody that you want matched up against a tackle and maybe even at times not a tight end, at least immediately over him. So you got to find ways to have Burns work in space, minimize how many times he's going to have two people on him, and I think you know you've got a pretty special talent there. Really interesting to see how they do and what they game plan to try to get him maybe as wide as possible and let him work to his strengths.
Absolutely. If you can free him up and let him chase Jalen Hurts in the open field, I'm feeling really good about that. Because not only is he faster than Jalen Hurts probably, he's also 6'6".
Yeah.
You know, he's got really nice length and reach and could do some things there. Man, I feel like they're going to have a good game plan. The great unknown here is just how much better is Hurts as a passer, right? Because if he comes out and he's like, oh, by the way, I learned to pass really well, then you're screwed.
Yeah.
You just are. But so is the rest of college football if that happens. So I get it. But one other thing, kind of going off script here, that I do like Florida State-wise, they got really good depth along their front.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Alabama wears teams down, but not every team. Right, like they didn't really wear LSU down last year. They didn't really wear Clemson down last year. Florida State is comfortable rotating guys, you know, Darvin Taylor, Fred Jones, Wally Ime, maybe Jalen Wilkerson for a couple snaps to spell Josh Sweat. Maybe when you're in your nickel, maybe you move Pugh and you take Burns off the field for a couple snaps just to keep him fresh. There's a lot of different pieces, and maybe Josh Kando gets to play a little bit in this game. There's a lot of things they could do. They've got a lot of bodies up front that I feel like they trust. You're probably not going to blow Alabama out, right? I mean, most likely. There's some chance, but I don't think it's a great chance. You know, if you can keep your guys fresh in the fourth quarter, that gives you a good shot. I actually think Florida State has better D-line depth than Alabama does.
I like what they have along the defensive line. I mean, we talked coming into the year, Derek Nnadi. Trust me, Alabama fans have looked at enough of Derek Nnadi, particularly at the end of the game or at the end of the season, to know how good of a player he can be. And we were excited, maybe even embarrassed by the amount of talent that Florida State has, the second and third team along that defensive line. You don't have guys like Wally Ame, like Fred Jones, that don't start at most schools. And Florida State has those guys, and will certainly lean on them, and curious to see what they're able to get out of the totality of their defensive line and how much they're able to utilize the depth that they built up.
Exactly, man. That's going to be so key. Special teams. Yeah, they've been kind of not so great
the last couple of years. Yeah, not so great. So you're in a dome. You got to just give me a good game from the punter, please. Nothing wild here. Nothing kicked to the wrong side of the field. Nothing on a line. Just go in, try to scrape the ball off the top of the ceiling, and just don't be a liability.
Hit that scoreboard.
Don't be a liability, man. If you hit the scoreboard, that's quite the feat in this stadium, I gotta say.
Can you hit it?
No. It's up there. It's a giant thing. It's gonna be. I think the stadium is pretty badass, folks. It's a hell of a situation, and the scoreboard that rounds the top of the stadium is something to behold. So anyway, back to the special teams. I think Aguayo has got to be the Aguayo that you saw in the first game of last year. I don't know if I need him slapping veins and everything else after made kicks, but just be the player you were. Make the kicks when called upon. Hopefully you don't feature too much, but special teams has got to be a nice little part of the game and certainly cannot turn into a liability.
I 100% agree. You know who probably does have the best punter in the country, right?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, you're playing him.
Yeah.
And that's not good. Alabama last year, in addition to having the best defense in the country, 47 yards average per punt. Dude.
Please, that is...
What do you think of FSU average?
38 somewhere.
40.31. So okay. So you know, if you're losing 7 yards per punt, let's say you punt 6 times, that's like a 42-yard drive, right? That you're giving up essentially. Right. You're giving up a drive of that length. I'm not so sure Alabama's field kickers are any good. I think both teams' returners actually will be pretty decent. They got Tavares McFadden doing some of the punts. We know they got the Keith Gavin, McFadden, and James doing kickoffs.
That's some meat kick on returns. The kickoff return.
Yeah, it is. I mean, those are explosive guys. They've had a big kick returner before. His name was Carlos Williams.
Yeah.
And he actually had one of the more impressive kickoff returns you'll see against Miami that was called back in the 2011? Yeah, 2011 game.
2011.
Yeah.
That was the Miami game of all Miami games.
Oh, God.
Dysfunctional and fantastic.
Like the 8-minute review. Remember that?
8-minute review. Just ridiculous. Ridiculous.
That was absolutely crazy, man. So we know Alabama has an advantage at punting. We don't know anything about the kicking. You can't give Alabama like an immense advantage at punting, right? I can't have a bunch of 30-yarders because then you're really screwed because the hidden yards and field position are going to play big in this game, in my opinion, as well as avoiding turnovers.
Got to avoid turnovers.
Yeah. got to throw the ball on first down well. That's something we didn't really think to say, but that's something Alabama definitely challenged you to do.
Definitely.
They dare you on that. You got a prediction on this thing?
Oh, man, I have wavered. I've been going back, watching tape, trying to convince myself not to be too homer, trying to convince myself as to some of the things that I think Florida State's put in place that is really going to allow them to move the ball in Alabama at times. I just, in my heart of hearts, I have a real hard time picking this team, being Florida State, in this game when I look at some of the questions that I have at Florida State's offensive line and what Alabama's going to have along the defensive line. Having said that, I think that Florida State plays particularly well. I think Florida State plays a first half that is of a very high level, which somewhat varies from some of the previous levels of play that we've seen out of the gate from them. I think Florida State may lose like a 2-point game, 31-33 or something like that.
I tell you what, man, 14 days ago to the day, I think we were both going to predict a Bama blowout.
I was going to predict probably somewhere around 10 to 12 points.
Yeah, I was – exactly. We weren't hearing good stuff, and we'll probably elaborate on this more after the game. I'm not going to give anything away to Alabama. Yeah. I'm a null, you know, and that's what my degree on my office says. Things weren't going so great. There were some issues. But it does seem like they've had a nice little turnaround in practice. And there's also been a turnaround when you talk to coaches on this staff, right? Hey, things are going better.
Mm-hmm.
They're feeling better. Some things have changed. I think the guys believe in this game plan. I think they're confident in the game plan. I think they're going to be creative, and I think they're going to be aggressive. Is it enough to take them over Nick Saban? I can't do it. But I got to tell you, I am feeling a lot more confident now. In fact, I almost picked him.
Yeah.
Than I was 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago, Noel fans did not want to hear me do this at all. That was oof. I think I'm going to go Alabama 27, Florida State 24. A little bit lower scoring than maybe some people think.
Mm-hmm.
I can certainly see the explosive plays, but also I like the defensive talent on both sides of the ball a lot. So yeah.
It's real. I think I just contradict myself with my score, but I think the under is pretty enticing if you look at that, and you could see how you could get there pretty quickly. The line is either 6.5 or 7, depending on where you look, Alabama being favored. And the over-under for what I've seen, again, but this is much more your specialty than mine, but 49 is the number that I've seen the most common as of an over-under.
I think that's still right. I'm pulling it up here just so we can give people, you know, accurate information as of the night we're recording this. But somebody was telling me 54 today, which seemed high, but maybe it's not. If it's 54, I'd much rather have under than under 49.
Better than 49, yeah.
But 49.5, so I was right. And the line is still sitting there at 7. If you want some solace in this, I did listen to the Scooch podcast today, which is an odds maker. He's out there in Vegas. He works for several of the properties that are owned. And I think they were saying, like, the tickets that are being written are, like, almost 7-1 more frequently for Alabama than Florida State. But yet the money is not that lopsided, which means the larger bets in proportion are coming down to Florida State. Generally, that means, you know, Joe Paycheck, who just bets, you know, like, likes to take the number one team in the country because he feels good about it, likes Alabama. Now, he did say that, like, the major sharps have not come down yet on Florida State. It could still happen. He said he's probably going to move the number to 7.5 so that he has a little more even distribution of money there, and he'll see if the sharps hit it. It just does seem like they're like the sharps are not super eager to back Alabama at the number of 7.
Mm-hmm.
This, by the way, opened like what 4 or 3.5 back, you know, months ago.
I think it was around 4, if I remember. Yeah.
Yeah. If you wanted to take Bama, 4, it was the time to take it. Not 7. Not when it crosses a key number with a total that's a little more NFL style than college style total. All right, Ingram. If they've made it this far, I believe we can talk about one of the best things ever. You know where I'm going with this?
I think so.
We're going to read a New York Times article to you.
This
was my introduction to Feinbaum, by the way.
This is a tip of the hat to our opponent.
It is. This is a very Alabama thing. So I was in law school at Alabama, This was one of the first times I ever listened to Feinbaum, and they had the mayor of Birmingham on there, and he was talking about bringing the Olympics,
yes,
to Birmingham. And I thought this was a spoof. Like, I didn't think this was the real mayor on the show. Feinbaum was not on ESPN back then. He was just the local.
He was WJOX.
Yeah, the Birmingham station.
Josh out of Birmingham.
So Tuscaloosa picks up the Birmingham station. I think maybe Auburn did too. I think so, because they would always yell and scream at each other. And I went home and I Googled it, and I thought, there's no way. Like, that had to be like some kind of like spoof, like gag thing I was listening to. It was real. New York Times article, August 23rd, 2008, by Robbie Brown. I want to find this guy on Twitter and like follow him. Like, man, how hard did you laugh when you were taking notes for this? This is fantastic. Birmingham, Alabama. By the way, this is right in the middle of financial crisis. Yes, August 23rd, 2008. So you got it. This is
tough times.
This is 9 years and a week ago. In his first year as Birmingham's mayor, Larry P. Lankford has proposed a $500 million dome stadium, a $125 million law enforcement complex, and a $33 million trolley car network. But those ideas were dwarfed by Mr. Lankford's proclamation this month. He wants the Olympics. Quote, "Why shouldn't Birmingham host the Olympics in 2020? Mr. Lankford, 60, asked in an interview at City Hall, smiling coyly and puffing a menthol cigarette.
quite the add-on there at the end.
Oh, God. It's New York Times, so you got to get some color. With 230,000 people, Birmingham is far smaller than most of the cities that have played the host of the Summer Olympics. It lacks sufficient hotel space, transportation options, and athletic facilities, as the mayor concedes. And Atlanta, the last American city to host the Summer Games is in 1996, is only 145 miles away. No matter, Mr. Lankford said. Our city has allowed the world to tell us for too long that we're, quote, less than and too small, and we bought into it, he said. We need to start thinking big. The mayor proposed constructing roadways, hotels, and athletic facilities, and spreading Olympic events throughout Alabama and into the neighboring states. So this is going to be like the Olympics of the South, I guess. The response is alternated between laughter and frustration. Roads are deteriorating in the city. That was true. The murder rate is rising. And the county that Birmingham is part of, Jefferson, where Mr. Lankford was president of the county commission until 2007, is on the brink of what could be the largest municipal bankruptcy in American history. It was.
Yes.
Like, spoiler alert. Yeah, that happened. Birmingham has an incredible number of needs, and we never have sufficient money to fund even half of them, said Valerie A. Abbott, a member of the city council. Why would we spend money on something where we have no hope of being selected? It does not take a very sharp person to see that we are way out of our league and don't have any hope of getting into the league, she said. But in a city forever toiling to escape Atlanta's shadow and the shame of its racial history, Mr. Lankford, who is black, envisions a lofty future. He had t-shirts and tote bags printed with the slogan, Olympics 2020, why not Birmingham? Let me read that again. The slogan to get the Olympics to Birmingham.
Why not?
Olympics 2020. Why not Birmingham?
Right.
His official proposal for the games includes the Robert F. Kennedy quotation. Some men see things as they are and say, why? I dream of things that never were and say, why not? At many points in Birmingham's past, times of trouble have been accompanied by declarations of a bright future, said Diane McWhorter, author of, quote, Carry Me Home, the Pulitzer Prize-winning history of the civil rights movement. Quote, but usually it is the white folks who are trying to distract away from the race problem, Ms. McWhorter said. Now, Langford has sort of adopted the mantle of image management. Now, remember how we talked about the tote bags and the t-shirts?
Yes.
That will come up later in this story, by the way.
I think I know
where there's some foreshadowing with this. By all accounts, Birmingham's odds of winning the Olympics are slim. Quote, I gotta breathe. With all due respect to the mayor of Birmingham, it's just not anywhere on our radar screen, said Daryl Siebel, a spokesman for the United States Olympic Committee, like the people who run this Quote, right now our attention is focused on one bid and one bid only, and that is our 2016 effort in Chicago. Quote, literally impossible was the prediction by Ed Turnichick, a developer who organized the unsuccessful bid by Tampa, Florida for the 2012 games. Sure to fail, and the longest of odds, declared the Birmingham News. When Mr. Langford, a Democrat, ran for mayor, he promised big ideas against nine opponents. They had nine opponents in Birmingham?
Yeah, I could see that. Okay. That's not all that.
Including the incumbent, he won without a runoff under the slogan, quote, let's do something. So he's kind of doubling down on these nebulous slogans. I like it. Kind of. But his first year in office has been shadowed by controversy. In April, the Securities and Exchange Commission filed a civil complaint against Mr. Langford, alleging that while on the county commission, this is the county commission that was overseeing the largest municipal bankruptcy in United States history because they issued these junk sewer bonds. While he was on the county commission, he raised $6.7 million in business loans, for a Montgomery banker, who gave him $156,000 to pay a personal loan, income taxes, and clothing bills. He denied the charge. I don't think denying it actually worked out too well for him. I'm pretty sure that they got him.
He was, footnote, he was arrested December of 2008.
So this was only 4 months before that?
Yes.
Otherwise, they might have actually got the Olympics hanger.
Yeah, well, that's true. That was probably, in fact, it was probably the Illuminati that brought him down. Didn't want Birmingham to be able to stand on the big stage.
Exactly. Atlanta called it New Orleans. It's like, look.
That's true, yeah.
The South's not going
to
stand
some of,
this.
Some of the boys in Buckhead made a few calls and brought down Birmingham.
All right. In response to the city's rising murder rate, Mr. Langford held a prayer service in April in which he wore a burlap sack and ashes on his forehead, an Old Testament tradition, and declared that, quote, Satan is at work in this town. Besides the Olympics, the mayor's most ambitious project is the construction of a dome stadium.
The domes.
You have a link on this, too, don't you?
Well, I swear I didn't remember this until we started talking. Some of my best friends, I mentioned this, are from Birmingham or Mobile, and I remembered a email back and forth that I had with my best friend from Birmingham. His response was, Langford's a total crook, been under investigation for a little while. This is good news for the city of Birmingham. Langford is a R word that's no longer socially acceptable to use, who wants to build a dome stadium. Although it was voted down by a wide margin, and also said he wanted to get the Olympics in 2020. What a joke. And that was from one Thomas Nelson of Mountain Brook.
Excellent. Mr. Langford, he is scouting locations for the stadium, which he says could be the home of college sports tournaments and a professional team. We're 9 years later, by the way. They did not have a dome, right? Correct?
No.
All right. No. Mr. Langford has issued his expensive proposals as many cities have scaled back their budgets as the economy has slowed.
Yes.
August 2008. This was literally during the crisis. A lot of people were losing their homes. There's all this talk about inflation, recession, he said. I choose not to participate. I just don't have this defeatist attitude. Let me read that again. There's all this talk about inflation, recession, he said. I choose not to participate. I just don't have this defeatist attitude. So he's like,
yes,
denying
monetary policy.
Deny. Yes. All right. City council members have complained that Mr. Langford has not provided enough details about how his proposal would be financed. Quote, everyone on the council, we're all interested in seeing a plan. The plan. A plan?
A plan.
Some plan? Miss Abbott said. Even if Birmingham bids and fails, some Olympic organizers say it could produce benefits. And I got to tell you, this is where the true hustle of this story comes in. Mm-hmm. If you guys have waited this out, and we're an hour and 20 minutes into this thing. This guy, listen to this, Inger. Even if Birmingham bids and fails, some Olympic organizers say it could produce benefits. Quote, "It's helpful for cities to think big thoughts," said Nick Vare, a public relations executive who organized Cincinnati's bid for the 2012 Olympics.
This is
Cincinnati bid on the 2012 Cincinnati?
This is the hustle.
This guy.
This is
got
the guy
Cincinnati
who goes around and convinces teams that they could have an NFL team or an NBA team. And yeah, no,
Montgomery.
Exactly.
You could have an NFL team,
right,
man.
You could dream big, Montgomery. Bring NFL football to Alabama.
Quote, "It forces people to pull back and think about their city from a perspective they're not used to." Like the city they live in that they presumably understand fairly well.
And write consultants large checks in the meantime.
I tell you what. I love doing this podcast with you. If I can ever get into the business of consulting medium large size cities, they need to bid for the Olympics. Which, by the way, the Olympics is a total sham anyway and is a huge money drain on any city that it comes to. But
absolutely.
I'm going to quit doing a podcast with you, and I'm just going to go be an Olympic consultant.
Well, we'll put the Nolcast in the ground at that point, but carry on. It's a side note. If you ever want to read an interesting Olympic story, read about the Olympics and Montreal legitimately almost brought the city under from a financial standpoint. It's an incredible story.
Is anybody checking on Rio?
Yeah, well, Rio. Oh my,
or Russia, yeah, like where Rio, they have all these things they don't use at all.
Rio was predictable, but still just absurd, some of the stories that are coming out of that.
I think the Winter Olympics are probably maybe a bigger hustle. Because like some of these things are like winter-only facilities, you know?
Yeah.
The end of the story. "For Mr. Langford, that is only part of the goal. The Olympics is about unity," he said. "It's about bringing people together to overcome adversity. It's about having a can-do attitude. Birmingham mirrors what the Olympics is all about, to a point where I don't see how they can turn us down."
No.
Which is why they had to arrest him, because clearly Birmingham had a slam dunk. Did he actually... We should probably look up to see if he actually...
We should see what happens.
Oh, he's found guilty on all 60 counts. And received 15 years in prison for bribery.
He's worth a Google search, folks. He really is.
This is incredible.
He's quite the character.
Also, Langford, who is 61 or 63. Apparently, the Birmingham News is not quite sure how old this dude is. I wonder why. Did he have a...
I can only imagine what kind of ambiguity
here it is. Thomas Spencer, the Birmingham News, October 18th, 2009. Larry Langford trial. Birmingham mayor mum on real age. Actual story. I'm not screwing with you. Look.
Nothing shocks me with Mr. Langford here.
Oh, my God. Okay, well, at least he was saying that he enlisted in the Air Force and lied about his birthday 2 years old, I guess. Or 2 years older. That's not that big of a deal, I guess. All right. You got anything else?
No, man. I'm excited. Love the idea of Florida State fans aplenty coming into Atlanta. At Ingram Smith on Twitter, if I can be of any suggestions or help to anybody coming to town as far as a restaurant recommendation or anything else. But hope you have a great time. Hope this game is everything we can think it is. I'm not trying to steal anything from the great Jeff Cameron here, but everybody keep in mind, it's still hot as hell in Atlanta. People are going to be super excited, going to start drinking early, tailgating early. Just pace yourself. Make sure that you're able to partake in the game that's going to be had Saturday night, because I think it's going to be pretty damn special and it's going to be a hell of a lot of fun.
I totally agree. All right, man. I will talk to you after the ballgame.
Fantastic.
This concludes this episode of The Nolcast. Make sure to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Write us at thenolcast@gmail.com or tweet us at Nolcast. For anybody that's interested, I'm actually picking the Noles to win. 31-25. Chalk one up for America. Regardless of whatever happens, though, Bud and Ingram are going to be there to recap everything that happened in the game right immediately afterward in their Instant Reaction podcast. Stay open for that one right after the game ends. Until then, for Ingram Smith and Bud Elliott, this is your producer, Judson Wright. See y'all on the other side. We'll be right back.
Thank you.